Hey guys, welcome to Thrive Bites, the official podcast of Dr. Colin Zhu, aka The Chef Doc. On every episode, I talk with health and wellness experts from all over the world, such as doctors, chefs, dietitians, coaches, and many more. And I sit down with them and have casual conversations about plant-based lifestyle, how to elevate our emotional resilience, and what it really means to thrive. And I bring all of this to you. So let's get to this week's episode. Okay, guys, well, welcome to another episode of Thrive Bites. I'm your host, Colin Zhu, and thank you for listening in. Tonight, we have a wonderful guest for you today. This is Dr. Yami Kozola Lancaster. Say hi, everyone, Yami.
Hello, everybody.
Well, I am so glad for her to be here. We've actually known each other for a little bit, and if for those of you guys who do not know who Dr. Yami is, she's a board-certified pediatrician, and she practices out of Yakima, Washington. And she is a member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. She's done many, many certifications, including the T. Colin Campbell Plant-Based Nutrition, and also the Physicians Council for Responsible Medicine Certified Food for Life Instructor. And plus a whole bunch of other certifications. She's just very, very, very well learned and well studied. And she has so much to offer for her patients. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is kind of fun because I interviewed you on my podcast. I don't even remember when it was. It's been a little bit. So it's fun to have the tables turned. And now I get to relax and just get to answer questions. So it's kind of fun.
I know. It's nice, right? So I definitely know what you mean. So we'll start off by saying I love learning about people's stories. And you definitely have a very unique story of how you came from A to B. You know, you started off as a pediatrician, you have a family, and then somewhere along the way, you've just developed so many different types of tools in your armamentarium for your patient population, including lifestyle medicine, including, you know, plant-based nutrition. So can you share with the audience, how'd you get from point A to point B?
Yeah, sure. So it's a little bit interesting because I've always been interested in nutrition since I was young, but mostly it was because I started dieting at a very young age. So I started dieting when I was probably around 9 years old. And I'm one of those people that has probably tried every single diet there is because I was interested in losing weight since I was really little. But I didn't discover plant-based nutrition until my 30s. So I was already working, practicing as a pediatrician, and I had gotten into long distance running. So half marathons and marathons. And then I don't know if you know much about the barefoot running movement. So I kind of got into that for a while. And I read a book called Born to Run. And in that book, they featured one of the main characters is Scott Jurek, who is a vegan ultra runner and has broken lots of records and won all kinds of ultra marathon races. And they talk about the population that they center on is called the Tarahumara, who live in the Mexican desert. And they are an indigenous tribe of Mexico. And one of the things that they do for fun is run. They run for fun. So, and they subsist on a predominantly plant-based diet because they live out in the desert and they don't have access to animal products the majority of the time.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things they talk about in the book, and it just really intrigued me. And as a pediatrician, I really was under the impression through my training and through my practice that it was healthier for children to eat meat and to drink milk in order for them to get enough protein and fat for their growth and on all of this. So that's kind of what I had always believed and always practiced. But whenever I read this book, I don't know, it's like something in my paradigm changed. And I thought, well, if there's a population of people that live out in the desert and they run all the time. Like, they're athletic.
Right.
They do it for fun, and they're super calm, and they're not dead. Then there's got to be something to this. I don't know. It's like my brain was like, okay, this is interesting. And I feel like I just got zapped, like this divine intervention, like, yeah, just try it. And I was like, well, maybe I should just try it and see what happens. Because I was genuinely curious.
Sure.
I was like, what's going to happen to me if I just eat plants? Like, how am I going to feel? And so I designed a very simple diet that I decided I was going to do for 30 days. And I actually didn't even tell anybody. I didn't even tell my husband. I was just going to do this. So it was very simple. I was just going to have whole grain toast with peanut butter for breakfast and pretty much rice and beans for lunch and dinner. Mm-hmm. And I'm Panamanian. Mm-hmm. So rice and beans is easy. Like, that's a staple growing up. And so that's not something I was intimidated by. And I knew it was delicious. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to try this. Within 3 days, my chronic constipation that I had had my whole life for 3 decades of my life was cured. And I was having to take a cap full of Miralax every day.
Oh my God.
It was, you know, like, it was something I lived with. I was told by my family members, everybody has it. This is just the way we are. It's our genes. We're just all constipated. And I just thought it was part of my body, you know? And I grew up that way. And within 3 days, I was like pooping. And I just get super excited about talking about poop because, like, when you spend so many years not pooping and what that feels like, and then you can poop. I mean, it's just like amazing, you know?
Yeah.
So that happened. And I, of course, it sounds so cliche. I hate saying it because I feel like people think I'm exaggerating, but really, I just felt so good. And I had so much energy and I was sleeping better. And I just felt so much more in control of my appetite and my body. And it was just really eye-opening for me. And of course, as the month went on, my 30-day experiment, I met one vegan because it was not even something I had even known what it was before I read this book. You know, that wasn't even on my radar. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's another vegan in Yakima. And so she gave me a book called Diet for a New America, The Kind Diet. And of course, I had watched Forks Over Knives, mm-hmm. The Cove, and Earthlings. And by the end of the month, there was no turning back.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much it.
That was your jump start. That was your inception into plant-based.
Yep. And it was pretty much cold turkey. But the thing is, it wasn't like this feeling of like deprivation. I was so curious. And through my exploration and what happened in my body and plus the learning, that was it. I was convinced, and it just didn't feel like I was missing anything. It felt like a whole new amazing world that I was getting to explore.
Yeah. So there's so many great points to that. Thanks for sharing. When the barefoot running movement came about, I started doing triathlons in 2006, towards my last year of college and entering into my first year of medical school. And, I was hooked, you know, just like for you, you know, when you love a certain sport and you get that feeling of liberation, you know, for mm-hmm. me, it was, you know, doing that. And I transitioned into half marathons and marathons for you. I discovered, similar to you, that whole barefoot movement when it started. You know, obviously it's not a, you know, brand new concept. It's just something that just came popped up again. Mm-hmm. And I remembering that I transitioned from heel striking to forefoot striking mm-hmm. because before, you know, and I thought it was the shoes. And when I learned about it, you know, before I transferred my my foot placement, I was having, you know, lateral, you know, side knee pain. I was having, you know, some hip issues. And then once I, you know, switched it, I was like, oh my God, they completely went away. So mm-hmm. there's something to it. There's something to, you know, that culture and the fact that they can just run miles and miles and miles, and they're not wearing backpacks. They're not hiking. You know what I'm saying? Like, they are, you know, trekking these long distances with very, very minimal, you know, things to consume, you know, mostly plants, you know, like you talked about. So I think that's, you know, amazing. And I love the fact that, you know, you're so bold and saying like, you know, I love pooping, because, you know, it's just a great, great, you know, feeling to have that, you know, catharsis, you know, so to speak. So
for real though, I mean, like, it's so amazing. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious. So you said that, you know, 9 years old, you started dieting. So were you considered or classified as overweight or obese, or like, why at nine? What happened at nine?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have to look back at my records and see what my BMI percentile was, because that's how we, you know, categorize it in children. But what happened is I've always loved food and I've always loved to eat and I've always been a very hearty eater. And growing up, I didn't have the healthiest diet. I grew up mostly on the standard American diet when I was in the U.S. I would spend part of my time in Panama every summer. So 3 months out of the year, I would live in Panama with my grandparents. Panamanian food, even though it's very simple and based, like a lot of it is plant-based.
Okay.
We eat a lot of fried food. And some of my favorite foods in Panama, because when I would go in the summer, I was basically living with my grandparents and they were taking care of me, and my grandma would spoil me and she would make all my favorite foods, with a lot of them are like fried plantain and fried corn fritters. And, you know, so, and I would love to eat. So I did, you know, I was chunky and I was a bigger kid, which was fine when I was younger. But once I started getting older, the Panamanian culture is very critical of size. So there is a lot of size bias in our culture. And once you hit a certain age, they're very open about telling you. So it was one of those things where I grew up with the comment of like, oh, you're so pretty, if you'd only just lose weight, and you don't want to get too heavy, and you shouldn't eat so much. And I started to internalize this and I developed a desire that I wanted to be thinner. And that became a goal of mine for several decades of my life.
So they kind of erred on the more of, you know, you need to be thinner as opposed to quote unquote bigger and thick bone, quote unquote.
Well, see, that's the thing. When you're little, it's okay to be, it's okay to be a little chunkier.
Right.
But once you get to a certain age, especially if you're female in our culture, thin is still valued. Thin is the value, and light skin. Right. But I never cared about the skin thing. I would stay out in the sun till I was purple. that never bothered me. I was like, whatever. But the being thin, I get a weird color when I get really dark, but it's like purplish.
But you do love to wear purple too. So
I do. That's my favorite colors. Yeah, maybe there's something
there
to
you go.
It.
Yeah, there you go.
So it was weird, because that desire to be thin really just set in to me. And it's just, I couldn't let it go for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, the reason why I say that is because, you know, that's very pervasive in American culture. You know, the media is obviously, we'd rather you look, you know, thin, a model, you know, emaciated, starving, basically, is, you know, what we want. And the opposite is what we, you know, want to, you know, condemned and stuff. Whereas other cultures, like African cultures, they value, you know, people that are more weight and, you know what I'm saying? And a little bit thicker. So it's always interesting to kind of see different cultural viewpoints. Hey guys, we're going to be taking a short break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Thrive Bites. Let's get back to the interview. Fast forward a little bit into your training and when you were in pediatrics, what was their version of teaching, you know, nutrition, you know, for, you know, from anywhere from neonates to infants to toddlers to adolescents? Was it, because I you know, I've interviewed a lot of doctors. We all, you know, collectively have, you know, the paucity of nutrition in medical school. But it's, I'm curious about, you know, what did you receive in your pediatric training?
In residency, there's very little. And what you learn is just what you specifically learn from your attendings or, you know, policy statements, things like that. But I feel like we don't really get great formal training on nutrition, but also the foundation of nutrition. It's like, this is the way it's done. And they give you a reason, but there's not really physiological explanations. And then that's just passed on from generation of doctor to generation of doctor, you know? So it's just every pediatrician knows that children need 2 to 3 servings of dairy. I mean, that's just what you do. You know, that's how you get strong bones. And and it's just like this thing that you hear, like, oh, well, kids need more fat and all this kind of stuff. And then you just believe it because that's what's taught to you. And then you pass it down to the next generation. I've always been interested in nutrition, and I would absorb more of that stuff. And I was very interested in helping children with their habits and their eating. But I don't think it was really until I acquired and adopted a plant-based diet myself that I really started to do it in a way that I feel is more beneficial to my patients.
So what about the rest of your family members with your husband and your kids? Were they, you know, I guess receptive, you know, when you made that transition, or, you know, what was that like?
So it was great. I am very, very lucky. I know I hear from lots of people that don't have the same situation. But once I finished my 30 days and I'm like, okay, I'm not going back, this is what I'm going to be going forward, I took one more month to carefully review the literature and determine whether it would be okay. I thought maybe it'll just be okay for my kids to also eat this way. I was surprised when I delved into the literature and found that not only can it be safe, but it can actually help them thrive. And it was just so mind-blowing and eye-opening to me that, like, okay, wait a second. This whole time I was under the impression that this was a kind of way of eating that you have to be super scared because you're going to die of a deficiency and it's going to be horrible. And, you know, you have to be like ultra duper, super duper careful. But once I really started reading, I'm like, actually, there's so many benefits. The benefits are more than anybody had ever told me. And really, as far as like the deficiencies, it's not that scary. Like, you can easily manage this, you know, it's not one of those things that you're just going to be like drop dead from a deficiency in a few days, you know?
Yeah. So from your experience, would you say that every age bracket, you know, from an infant and going up to adolescence would be, you know, from your point of view, like safe in terms of, you know, just incorporating or starting or just having a strong foundation in plant-based? Or would there be certain things to be worried and concerned about? Because, you know, for our audience listeners that are, you know, parents and they're thinking, you know, they're probably already plant-based, but they're probably questioning whether, you know, is this a good idea, you know, to raise my kids like this too?
Absolutely. No, I think it's safe and I think it's healthy. And I think that it can help children and families thrive. I do think that parents do need to be cautious and make sure that they are getting the proper supplement. And they're not that many, B12 being the most important if you're going to be on a predominantly or completely plant-based diet. But also just to ensure that they're doing it in a way where children are consuming sufficient calories, which the majority of the time is not a problem. What happens is some of these cases that we hear in the media, where there's children that may have been harmed by, quote, a vegan diet. If you really look into these cases, these children were not consuming sufficient calories, either because they were mostly drinking juice or raw foods or something where they just were not consuming sufficient calories. I'm so lucky that my practice, I have my own practice, and I have a lot of plant-based kids. They eat a variety of foods and they grow and they thrive and they're doing great. So I think it's just important to know that you know, you do have to be mindful when you feed your children. You can't just, you know, give them apple juice and that's it. You know, like you have to really make sure that they're getting a variety of food to get a variety of nutrients in, but it's not as scary as people would think. And it's not as difficult as people would think. And definitely children can thrive on this way of eating.
I love it. Yeah, so describe a little bit more about your practice and how, what came first, your practice, or did Veggie Fit Kits, come after that? Of course, you also do, your podcast, you have a whole YouTube channel. Like, what spawned each other?
Well, I became plant-based first, and that was 8.5 years ago. And then after that, I just felt like I really wanted to get the information out there. First of all, just for my own patients. So at that time, I worked at a community health center, and I would tell families about this way of eating and recipes and things like that. But, my appointment times were so short, and I didn't have that much time to really get in there and explain things to them. So I decided that I would start a website so that I can put all this stuff on there. And that's really how it started. And then it evolved into a website where I could help support plant-based parents or even other healthcare practitioners that were concerned. Because when you come from traditional training and you're told that this is dangerous, of course you're going to get concerned if you have a patient that says that they don't want to eat an animal product. So this kind of evolved into a place where I could support parents, family members, and healthcare practitioners. And so that was probably around 6 or 7 years ago. And 4 years ago is when I started my own practice called Nourish Wellness. And the reason I did that was so that I could have more time to sit down with my families. And I do have a pediatric primary care office. So I see bread and butter pediatrics, well child checks, and ear infections, and all that kind of stuff.
Lovely, lovely.
But I have enough time to sit down with my families and really, in a relaxed manner, discuss diet and lifestyle and really get into it and not feel like I'm rushed and have to run from room to room.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I'm similar. I spent the last 4 years as of this podcast as a traveling doc and practice in different states, and creating the Chef Doc was creating similar to you, just a portal, a wellness, place to go. And so I totally understand that. You want to be able to reach as many people as possible. So I'm sure, your patients really love you for that. I'm curious. I also just interviewed another pediatrician. She has been practicing, oh, probably over, a couple of decades, and she told me that, back in the day, type 2 diabetes, maybe 20, 30 years ago, didn't exist. So, having that great prevalence of so many children having type 2 diabetes, what have you found? Did they get better from, when you start teaching them and their families the plant-based lifestyle? Did they start losing weight? Because for my adult populations, for family practice, they would get better. Their blood pressure stabilizes, their cholesterol, regulates, or sugars regulate, and we actually have to start de-prescribing medication. So I'm curious to hear, what your patients, how they've improved.
Well, that's a great question. And ironically, so in my previous practice was very different from my current practice. My previous practice, I did have a couple of kids that had type 2, a few kids that had type 1, but I didn't have a lot of kids that had chronic conditions yet, besides just being, on the heavier side, not eating the proper diet, having chronic abdominal pain, constipation, all of those sort of chronic symptoms, but not yet the metabolic syndromes. So I didn't do a bunch of that. And then I started my own practice, which I was like, okay, now I'm going to have time to really get in there with people and talk to them about all this stuff. And I did not anticipate the fact that whenever you start this kind of practice, you tend to attract the health conscious people. So my practice is actually full of super healthy, thriving children who most of them eat either a fully plant-based or predominantly plant-based diet with parents that are very receptive to my suggestions about diet and avoiding dairy and all of these things. But I will say that children are just like adults. So in the cases that I have had where the families did make dietary changes, things do improve. Constipation improves very rapidly, just like as you saw with my own case, with my personal case. For kids, if they are willing to make dietary changes, it changes very rapidly. The abdominal pain goes away. They just start feeling better and sleeping better. And there's just so many improvements, even behavioral improvements for children. When I see children with autism and ADHD, that the parents were like, well, that's all they'll eat, or they have to eat something. But when I start talking to them about why it's important to optimize the diet and they make dietary changes, we see behavioral problems improve. So things that can make me like a big deal for parents and a big deal for a kid's life, it can be improved and optimized with diet and lifestyle changes.
Yeah, that's awesome, because it's super important to kind of, you know, in a way, you know, when you have your own practice, you know, you have certain people gravitate towards you because of how it's almost like a style, you know, how you practice. And you're very, population is very unique, where, you know, you attract a lot of healthy, you know, people. And of course, across the United States, you know, the demographics are different. So for you know, audience members that come from different states or live in different states, and, you know, they tend to have, you know, more unhealthier in environments, what would you suggest in terms of, you know, transitioning, you know?
Like for diet?
Yeah, for a plant-based diet.
The thing I always like to start with is dairy, because I feel like it just is one of the culprits in so many problems when it comes to children. Like I said, the constipation, the chronic abdominal pain, even some autoimmune-like symptoms that some kids have with like joint pains and things like that. So that's what I start with. And we just go through and say, well, what are you willing to change? And we start making those changes. I think some of them are pretty simple, like going to a plant-based alternative for, you know, putting on your cereal and in your recipes and things like that. That seems to be pretty simple. What people have the most trouble with is the cheese, you know, and you probably have that experience too, is the cheese is like, oh, I can't get off my cheese.
Everyone, almost every other episode, it's really, and I ask this very similar question to, you know, for those my guests that are providers or doctors. And I asked them, you know, what is the hardest thing to transition or to get off? And cheese has been very, very, you know, top three of hard to get off.
And so we talk about alternatives, but I also talk to them about how it's not necessary to eat these things and how you can get calcium in other sources and how you can get your bone strong through weight-bearing exercise. And so if parents are willing to give it a try, they usually are able to transition off. And then the next thing is just really, I like to emphasize increasing things rather than cutting things out after that. So how can we get more beans in the diet? Because in the American culture, we don't tend to use a lot of beans. So families aren't as comfortable cooking beans or using beans in recipes. Yes, so I have to give them ideas or even ways to integrate beans into things that they already cook. Like, throw some beans, throw some chickpeas into your pasta, or even blend beans into your pasta sauce. That's a really easy way to do it. Everybody likes hummus. That one seems pretty simple. Like I ask people, when I ask people about beans, they're like, we don't eat that many beans. Like, do you eat hummus? Oh yeah, we love hummus. Okay, just eat more hummus, you know, bean dip. Everybody likes bean burritos. So those are some of the things that are familiar. And then just trying to give ideas of other ways that you can incorporate legumes into your diet. That's the next thing I work on usually.
It's quite interesting. And it's the same thing for adults too. It's like, you know, for people that are not used to eating, you know, I grew up, you know, eating a lot of Chinese cuisine, and our foods are balanced. So we would have vegetables, equal amounts of vegetables to meats, to, you know, everything. So when I transitioned to plant-based, you know, 5 years ago, it wasn't that hard. But for those who are more predominant in, you know, like the, you know, standard American diet, it's, a lot of it, they don't even know. They don't even know what a certain produce, like, they don't know what black-eyed peas are or asparagus or kale. Like, these things are very, very foreign to them. It's interesting how, like, you know, you said a burrito or you said hummus, you know, these are very, you know, familiar and comfort foods type of items, but you just kind of have to mask it and be creative.
Absolutely.
Hey guys, we're going to be taking a short break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Thrive Bites. Let's get back to the interview. Shifting gears a little bit, talking about families and talking about parents, and it doesn't have to be plant-based, but what are your observations, kind of reaching into, you know, lifestyle medicine? What are your observations in terms of, you know, just young parents or starting out families or families that are looking to improve their own lives as well? What would you tips to kind of give them in terms of, from misconceptions of health and wellness? Like, how would you kind of redirect? Like, what are the common misconceptions that they go through in raising families? And how do you redirect them?
Okay. Well, first of all, I would say that parents love their children. And parents are doing the best they can with what they have, with whatever learning, education, experiences they have. And so my goal is to support parents wherever they are and help them reach their goals. But parents really do love their kids. So I know that they're trying and they're trying their best. I think that if I take everything into account, what I really want parents to know is that they have more power than they think in molding their children's habits, in helping set the example that how they want their children to live, what kind of diet they want them to eat, how active they want to value their sleep. Parents have to take charge of those things. They have to model them, and they have to feel like they do have control, like this is something that they can actually influence. And when I have parents that feel like that and have that belief, then I can really see it. When there's parents that feel like their kids are in charge and they're just kind of running life based upon what their kids want or desire, then I see a very different picture. But it just has to do with health beliefs and how probably those parents were raised and how they usually manage things. But I would say take charge, and you don't have to be perfect. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to fall off the wagon sometimes. And there's going to be weeks that are just going to be like, wow, we ate fast food every night. We didn't sleep enough. Everybody's stressed out. And by the end of the week, we're frazzled. You have a week where things just don't go your way. They don't go as planned. You eat out a lot. You don't get enough sleep. Everybody's stressed out. By the end of the week, you're just really frazzled. Just take a step back, evaluate what happened, make some edits, and try again. You don't have to feel like you're a failure because you had a bad week. You don't have to feel like you're a failure because you had a bad month. We can always retry. We can always try again a different way. Why was that? Why did that week go the way that you didn't plan? What can you change next time to make it easier? Can you learn to batch cook? Can you get a meal delivery service? Can you get a family member to help? What are some of the things that you can do to make it easier for you, support the habits and the lifestyle that you want to have? So that's what I would say, is for parents to be gentle with themselves, feel empowered that they can do this, and to know that you never, ever have to be perfect. I live and breathe lifestyle medicine, and I am far from perfect. So I'll tell you that I have weeks where I'm like, oh my gosh, guys, it was a tough week for everybody. Definitely. What can we do this weekend so that next week will be a little bit easier for us, you know?
Yeah. I think the challenging thing is, as much as we want to, you know, better ourselves, we consider ourselves like a failure if we can't do it perfectly, right? And so we just beat ourselves up. We judge ourselves so much because, you know, we didn't do it to a T, right? And it's not about that. You know, just like you said, and you said it beautifully, is making the small steps and making progress. That's what it really comes down to. So I love it. So this has been awesome. I love to close out by asking my guests, you know, what makes them thrive? I think there's a difference when, you know, people state what they do and versus what they live for. So for you, what has made you thrive over the years, you know, personally, professionally, and, you know, like who are you at the end of the day?
Well, I think there's two things. One of them is I'm persistent and I don't give up. So, you know, I've suffered in my life from depression and times when I just didn't feel good about myself and about my life. But I knew that there had to be a better way. I knew that there had to be a way that I can feel better and I can accomplish my goals. So that persistence, I think, is really important. But then the second thing that has really changed my life is cognitive behavioral techniques. So learning how to manage my thoughts and my feelings and believing and practicing influencing those. So how can I start to change my thoughts so that more control over how I feel? And that has been life-changing for me, because once I learned that, it trickles down into everything in my life.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. For me, it's went into culinary school in between medical school and residency. I also enrolled myself into a 10-day meditation retreat. And from there, what I realized was that, you know, in general, we don't really have control of anything in our lives. The only thing we do have control of is really how we react to, you know, things, you know, that happen outside of us, right? How do we choose to, you know, allow certain life obstacles to come, you know, come either come at us or present it, you know, for us, you know, in a way. It's all about perspective. So I love it. Yami, this has been great. For our audience members that want to look you up further and want to reach out, where can they find
you? Well, the best place is dryami.com, which is dryami.com. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook. My handle is at the Dr. Yami. And I have a newsletter so that they can sign up on my website if they'd like. But I am active on social media and I love to reach out to people. So on my podcast, I have some videos. I haven't done any new videos in a while, but hopefully I'll get back into that at some point. And so I'm out there. People can find me.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was super fun.
Thank you. And thank you for you guys for listening. This has been another episode of Thrive Bites. Please catch us here weekly. If you like it, please like, follow us, and subscribe. And please rate us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Yami. And we'll see you on the next one. Hey guys, that was another episode of Thrive Bites. If you like that episode, please subscribe and follow weekly for new episodes. And don't forget to rate us on Apple Podcasts.